Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Sunday Social. I am your host, Lucy Moon, and we discuss all things pop culture. Today, we're talking about Fantastic Beasts and maybe how not to find them, because I don't know about you, I haven't seen the film and I'm not planning to. However, I wanted to chat with someone who has, and that person happens to be Hazel Hayes, who is a writer, director, and I would argue kind of online film critic. I've heard many things about the new Fantastic Beasts, and there have been many articles written about it. Specifically, I'm thinking of one from The Telegraph, which is titled, "Not Such a Fantastic Beast is Johnny Depp's Character on the Rocks." And then also from The Metro, who have written about Claudia Kim and her response to criticism over her casting as the character Nagini. I find all of this very interesting, especially as I think it raises a lot of questions about women in film and casting and how we can do better, especially in the wake of Me Too. And so I thought Hazel was a perfect person to talk to. So we had a really good chat all about Fantastic Beasts. It was quite a funny chat, I won't lie. And then just about casting in general and how to be a diverse caster without resorting to really poor quality tokenism. So I hope you really enjoy this chat. Let me know if you do. You can message us on Twitter and Instagram at The Sunday Social Podcast. So thank you. I hope you enjoy this. Hey, I'm with Hazel.
Hi. Good. We just laughed like something was hilarious. You don't know why.
This
Welcome.
Is part of the fun of making podcasts with people you're actually friends with, because yes. There's the two types, isn't there? There's the like, oh, I'm going in to interview someone who is minor celeb or notable talent, and then there's your friends who notable talent as well.
Yeah, it's also sometimes when people come around that you haven't really met and they just arrive in your home. I've had this with Tipsy Talk so many times, and they're perfectly lovely people, but it's just like, this is awkward.
We all know it. Hello, welcome to my home. Why are you here?
You end up being friends by the end of it, but
exactly, yeah. But it does take a strong like 3 hours.
Yes.
Anyway, this is Hazel Hayes.
Hello.
Hazel, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi,
I'm Hazel Hayes. I am clearly a friend of Lucy's. We'll begin there. In which capacity do you want?
How people might know
this
you.
Shouldn't be difficult. Introduce yourself, she said.
So when I intro people, sometimes I say stuff that they don't do anymore, or I got it wrong, or
I see
that it's not how they would introduce themselves, and I'd rather it be what they think
you're
they
being
are.
Diplomatic.
Yeah. Got it.
Well, I would call myself a writer-director. And primarily I have been creating work for YouTube for a couple of years, ranging from vlogs to sketches to short films, that kind of thing. And then started making sort of longer form series, and then started doing more script writing and writing to spec and writing for briefs with various companies and that kind of stuff. It's one of those jobs. It's one of those. I'm trying to be a filmmaker and I'm sort of halfway there.
Yeah.
Good.
Yay.
Yeah, I did that. You'd be surprised how rarely someone asks me to describe what I do.
That's so interesting, because I always think of you as being like a writer-director, specifically I think on the writer end. I don't know why.
Yeah.
And then also almost a critical voice, or like there's a critic like on Twitter, for example, like on your on your microblogging sites.
I'll take that.
Yeah, you have like a critic angle that I really
do.
Enjoy.
I have opinions.
Yeah. And you share them, which is why.
Yeah.
So I came to Hazel today and said, I'd really like to talk to you about Fantastic Beasts. And she went, oh no. Straight away.
Like, please tell me we're not talking about Johnny Depp. I don't remember that. And she was like, we're going to talk about that a little bit. I'm like, oh no. This is gonna surface in a few years when I've made my first feature. And I'm going to be like, she had opinions about this thing and it's since come out that she's wrong.
Yeah. This is the thing, like, you can't, it's just complicated. So maybe we're going to, like, walk slowly around the topic of Johnny Depp.
Let's do that.
And maybe not focus in on it.
Mm-hmm.
But first of all, I wanted to ask you, have you seen The Crimes of, I don't even know how to say his name, Grindelwald?
Yes. There's various pronunciations within the film, in fact, Lucy.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it ranges from Grindelwald to Grindelwald. I kind of say Grindelwald, just so I don't sound pretentious, but I think that there's a more German pronunciation, potentially, that is more correct. We'll go with the W version. I don't, look, it's not the worst of the film's problems, so I'm skirting around it slightly.
Oh dear, so you have seen it?
Yes.
And
have you not seen it?
I've not seen it because I don't want to put my money towards it.
I don't
it.
Want to.
Yeah. Well, I'm a massive Harry Potter fan.
Yeah.
Like a real diehard Harry Potter fan. And obviously I went to see every film in the cinema, bar the first, I was 8. I saw
Fair,
it,
that's allowed.
You know, at a Halloween night on DVD.
A Harry Potter SWAT team swing in the window and take you. I'm like, you didn't see the first one.
Yeah, you know, I've put a lot of money into the Harry Potter franchise, and I haven't seen Fantastic Beasts and I haven't seen the new one because I just don't necessarily want to fund a tangent project because I'm worried it's going to be like the prequels of Star Wars.
That's fair. I haven't seen the Han Solo film.
Oh, yeah.
And even I was offered to go to screenings for free and I just didn't want to because it's like, no, I don't need that in my brain as part of the lore. I'm sort of good. I will say I'm not as diehard a Harry Potter fan as you. So it's interesting to have two different perspectives. I am a fan of the films. I'm pretty sure I saw them all in the cinema as they were coming out. But I didn't read the books. I think it was a weird point in my life where I think I was a little older.
I was going to say, you have to be, I tried to reread them when I was maybe like a late teenager and it just, like late teen, early 20s, and it just didn't have the magic for me at that time. But I think now I could go back and read them and it be.
It's not to say there's no merit in something that's written for a younger audience. I mean, I love YA sci-fi and stuff. It's just, I just couldn't get into it. And I had come out of reading The Lord of the Rings.
I was just thinking, did you read Terry Pratchett and stuff and then go into
it? I had done Tolkien and then I was really getting into Stephen King. So I'd read The Stand and It and I think The Dark Tower as well around that time. So to then go back to Harry Potter just felt, and it should have been my bag. Like I love fantasy and I love sci-fi, but I just didn't get into it. And then to be honest, the film started to come out and I kind of went, oh, well, I'm enjoying these. Yeah. It's fine. But yeah, so I saw both of these spin-offs as someone who, I would say I'm angry that it was so bad because I love film.
Yeah.
And because I saw potential in it from that perspective, but
good
not
actors,
necessarily.
Good budget.
Yeah.
You have a series of films that has fluctuated, but none of them have been terrible.
No.
Like, I mean, I really love the third film because it's Alfonso Cuarón and it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's clever and good.
Mm-hmm.
But and they all vary a bit.
Everyone has their favourites. Like, and that's sweet. But I think this is a whole other, I think it's at like 40% on Rotten Tomatoes or something. Like, it's definitely got the worst reviews of any of the franchise. I think that literally was reported by NME today. And it's sad. It's just like, yeah, like you say, there's resources behind it. There's a massive studio. There's incredible talent. You've got Oscar-winning actors in there. And they're all giving it their all. And I will say, everyone on screen is fantastic. Everyone is trying to make the best of it. It's just not very well written and executed. There's no plot. It's messy. Nothing really happens. An awful lot happens.
God.
But
yeah, nothing.
Nothing that I care about.
Did you ever see any of the 50 Shades films?
Again, refused to watch them on the basis that they looked shit.
Yeah.
And I knew, like, I would be angry.
The perfect example of, I think, of that no plot, but so much happens.
Yeah. That is
did you make this?
I love those ones. And this is like, and apologies to anybody else who's also heard me on Reasonable Beef doing this, because I've just spent this week I didn't know we were talking about this when you came in.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's totally fine. It's funny. But what was I about to say? Yes, what I said on that one as well was like, it's just so rambling and meandering and an awful lot of shit happens. And like, the thing is with 50 Shades, again, I probably wouldn't really have cared because who gives a shit? But with this, I did care because I knew the potential of it. I know the potential these characters have to move people and affect people, and that their stories can be so interesting and magical. And like, yeah, there's this whole world full of just so many interesting things, and they just focused on all the ones that weren't. So I think that's why, it's the same reason I get upset about the DC stuff, because these are characters that I love and I know have good potential, and they're just shitting on it a bit. So it's quite sad. I'm just sad.
I enjoy your review though.
Thank you.
You express it in such a nice way.
I love those films as well. But like, when I got home, I got a bit high, and then I got a bit angry.
You got a bit high.
So I had like an hour long rant whilst high, just sort of describing the film from beginning to end. And that's like, that's all you need to do. Like, you don't even need to embellish or insert opinion. You just need to say to someone, this is what happened.
Oh my God.
And you describe it and they go, holy shit, that's a mess.
So what was the first thing that jumped out to you after leaving the cinema? Just out of curiosity, I'm sure you discussed this because I would love to know, because for me, the thing I will always notice if I watch a bad film is continuity errors in editing. Because I think I edit every week, it's not even like I edit anything big. I just really see when something's wrong now.
That's interesting. I think there were problems with editing, certainly. Those are things that weirdly I can forgive. If it's a good story told well, and there's like, you know, continuity errors or like whatever, you know, I've been on a set. I know what it is to miss something small like that. I think one time on the series I was making, I left a bottle in the background with my name on it. It's quite prominent in a shot. And I was so annoyed as the director to just leave it in shot and not notice it on the monitor. Like, but things happen. People's hair moves or, you know, light change.
Talking like, have you seen I Feel Pretty? She drinks from a previous empty wine bottle. And I'm like, how have you refilled the wine bottle? Anyway,
but stuff like that, I kind of can forgive if it's otherwise good. Even little editing mistakes. Like, I saw On the Basis of Sex recently, and I had a massive problem with some of the editing early on, but then it sort of panned out and it was fine. And overall, I think the movie's very worthy and it's an important film and it's trying to do a good thing. And so I'll always be kind of like, is it deserving of this anger? But the first thing I think I felt, I came out in a bad mood, which was like halfway through it. It was very palpable to the people around me. Like, my friends were like, you're not having a good time. And I was like, no, I'm really, I don't want to be here anymore. This is making me angry. And everyone kind of felt that way. Now, this is, to be fair, this is a pack of pretentious twat film lovers who are like, I would have done it better. And who's to say we would? We probably wouldn't have. It's a huge, huge mammoth task. But I just came away feeling like it was a waste of time, not my time, it was a waste of all of the time and effort and money that went into it, in that I was entirely unaffected by it. I have left films where they have touched me in some way, or they've left me thinking about something or feeling something, and it stays with you, it lingers and it creates a question, and that's what good art should do. Or it just really fucking entertains you and it's funny and you escape for a little while, one or the other. This didn't either. I just didn't care. I remained entirely unaffected.
I hate that. I think that's maybe one of the worst things about bad films, when you want to stop watching them.
Yeah, and you can't because you're in a cinema and you've paid to see it.
Oh, you can walk out. I've got friends who fully do the... They're like, no.
Yeah. I think in the industry that I'm in particular, like, given the fact that I've done two podcasts about this week, like, people are interested, and I am interested in the franchise and everything around it, and I think I want to be informed and I want to be able to speak about it, you know, with coming from an educated place, I guess. So that's why I was like, no, I'm going to see for myself, so that I don't just believe the 40% on Rotten Tomatoes, that I really form my own opinion about it.
Exactly. And stuff like that as well. I think with bad film, you can also develop a cult classic status after a while. Mm-hmm. And it's about assessing, like, whether that film has the potential for that or whether it truly is.
Like, Clueless is awful. Oh, yeah. But it's one of my favourite films. Yeah. And it fully has that cult status. Yeah, there's loads of films like that that really aren't very good when you watch them back.
Right, I have a question.
Go.
About, I don't want this conversation necessarily to stir around Fantastic Beasts, but I do want to bring up Claudia Kim, who was cast as Nagini.
Oh, God, yeah.
And...
oh, fuck, I just remembered that character.
Yeah. So... despite all the, you know, ignoring...
my voice is muffled because I have my hands over my face. Just...
this is so entertaining. You feel it so viscerally.
I really do.
You're like, oh, yeah. Like, I can feel the sickness in your stomach as you think about this film.
Oh, yeah. I care too much about films. It's my problem.
So when it first came out about her casting as Nagini, there was a lot of controversy.
Yes.
Because she... is a South Korean woman, and it seemed like typecasting to suddenly bring in a non-white character that's so... it felt to the audience kind of blatantly like typecasting when J.K. Rowling did not create or write a very diverse world. And that's... people are kind of okay with it because of the time at which she wrote it and her own world, like when she was writing it.
Mm-hmm.
She was living in Edinburgh and was your classic British white person.
Mm-hmm.
So some people were really disappointed in that, from what I remember. And some people were like, no, it's great. Diversity is important. Just wanted to have a chat about, like, when casting is appropriate and inappropriate. And you have casted some things.
I've casted some things.
Because I've always felt like you guys
got some feelings about this as well.
You haven't. I've always felt like you guys, as in Hazel and the team she works with, for those listening, have like a really good attitude to it, where you write around interesting characters, and if you don't know something about those people, you then pull in.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of consult with people who have that life experience, and then with casting, you try and bring in people who are appropriate for that role. Mm-hmm. And keep an open mind to diversity. Yeah. So if you watch any of your projects...
it's just being aware, I think. Okay, you said a few things there. Let me try and address all of them. No, it's fine. I remember all the things. The problem is not that they just cast a non-white actor in this sort of... in a role that was already kind of stereotypical... for me, I could be wrong. I'm sure fandom will correct me. Wasn't there always something in the lore about Nagini being... doesn't it have its roots in an Asian language or something to that effect?
So apparently it's Indonesian, according to J.K. Rowling. I thought it was Hindi, but it means like big snake-like creature, I think.
Brilliant. So, very literal.
Subtle, yeah.
Yeah, you've fucking hit the nail on the head there, JK. Okay, so the problem wasn't really with the cat. That in and of itself is not a problem for me. The problem is, you're right, she wrote a world where everyone was basically white at a time when that was sort of happening, and we've forgiven her. But the problem is, you now have a new series where you had the opportunity to create a whole new set of characters. And whereas you look at something like Star Wars, where now the hero is a woman... and her partner in crime is a black guy, and then you have Diego Luna, who's Mexican, and it's a very, very incredibly diverse cast. A lot of the First Order stay white because it is kind of a commentary on the right wing and all that kind of thing. With this, we've created a whole new set of white characters. The main character is a white dude, which, you know, is fine. But his friends are two white women and a white dude.
And the villain is a white
guy. And it's like, well, you're not really...
he's always painted extra white in films.
Extra. true. And while you might argue that maybe the only decent thing about this film is that it does draw attention to the rise of fascism and the far right, that is my sink, just wanting attention. It, you know, it hits on that theme, that maybe the only theme it does address, and quite badly, but it tries. It's not really creating that much. There's no contrast because most of the main characters are white too. I mean, Lita isn't, and that other dude who tells them all the exposition isn't. But yeah, the main characters are white, and so when you bring someone in to play a bit character, I think that's where the problem also Credence is. And really, and this is the issue, is she is an entirely bit character who is there.
Could you explain what a bit character is for people like me?
She's just a bit of a non-entity. Okay, it's just like she's a peripheral character who follows Credence around and is, I'm not going to say slave-like, but I just did, like, she's sort of a little bit subservient.
Yeah.
That's the word. Yeah, she's subservient to him, and she is really just there as a plot device kind of for him, and it's like she has nothing of her own.
Yeah.
So that's what bothers me. It's like, oh, you've gone to the bother of having a more diverse cast, but then you've made that character. But then I said something about all the female characters being a bit shit and like how that might be sexist, except it's not sexist because none of the characters are particularly well written. They're not very complex or interesting, so I can't say it's sexism. It's just bad writing. So that's the issue with... God, I sound like such a complete con. So that's the issue with her. Casting in general, yeah, I really, really go to pains to make sure that I'm being aware of diversity. And it is tough. Like, you sometimes, early days, like, you would get things from people being like, oh, just all white people, is it? And it's like, mate, I've got no money.
Yeah.
These people are just people I know who were willing to come along. I didn't have the luxury of running a casting and, you know, really like having the choice to be like, no, it will be diverse or it won't happen, because I couldn't reach out to other actors. And like, this is also a sad fact, but most of my friends are white. And why that is the case in London, a very fucking diverse city, I'm not really sure. But that's just sort of how it's landed. We all met through YouTube and this is, we know each other, and it's obvious in our videos that there's a lot of white people, and it pisses me off sometimes. And so then when I did start to have a bit of a budget and I was making more scripted stuff, it was very much something I was aware of, to introduce people of colour, even people with disabilities, people of different sexual orientation. Like, I think that's really important to show. That said, that's not necessarily my story to tell. So that's another one, is like, I haven't been disabled, and I haven't been oppressed by white people. So, you know, I'm not Dee Reese. I'm not out there making Mudbound. And that's not the story that I can tell. But what I would say is, you can write characters and then cast whoever the fuck you want. Like, I can write a story about anyone and then in casting potentially make them male or female, make them gay or straight, you know, make them young or old, whatever. So that's something to be aware of. And it's something that it's so noticeable in films like Nancy Meyers films. Like, oh my God, I went to see Home Again last year with Reese Witherspoon. Not many people have seen it. But stuff like that, or The Holiday, It's Complicated, like those types of sort of fumbling rom-com, sort of innocent, like harmless films. There are no people of color.
Yeah.
And once you start to notice this stuff in film, it becomes aggravating. Like, there came a point watching Home Again where I think I had seen two black people who, I think one was a waiter and someone else was like someone else in the service industry, but none of the main characters, of which there were many. Even at one point she rocks home and there's a yoga class happening in her back garden for some fucking reason, and there's like 25 women and an instructor, all white. And it's painfully apparent that these people have, you know, a script has been written, it's gone through a production company, a studio, casting, you've had the castings, you've brought all these people in, you've gone, yeah, great, you've had them on set, you filmed it, and no one at any point along the way went, wait, this doesn't look right, what's missing? That bothers me. Like, when we're making small little productions and, you know, we're kind of using whatever resources we can, and often that's favors from friends, it's one thing, but in a big budget movie like that, to ignore diversity is really appalling. And that's why something like when I saw the first Fantastic Beasts, it was like, okay, so there's four main characters, they're all just white and straight, and like, okay.
Woo.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you could have changed that. You could have tried to make a difference, and
yeah,
you just didn't.
Especially in those films that are set in today.
Yeah.
In a city. They're always those rom-coms. Now you've mentioned it, I think to all the rom-coms, like, they're always set in, yeah, in like Seattle. Or like, you know, like, yeah, like Toronto.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, some American city with a diverse population,
mm-hmm,
with characters that could be anyone.
Yeah.
It's really aggravating.
It could be certainly cast by anyone. I mean, you know, when I'm writing, I often do write from a female perspective. And I want to do that, and it's something I'm intending to do. And a lot of the characters are sort of semi-autobiographical as well. And for that reason, I think maybe it, not that it would be hard, but I think it would completely change the meaning if I were to suddenly change my main character, who is a woman, and it's about her, you know, yeah. struggles as a woman, to a man. That might be a bit different. But in action films or, you know, big blockbusters, I see absolutely no reason why, if you have a team of people who, they're not particularly complex, yeah. they're just going to go out and shoot some shit, like, why they can't be diverse absolutely baffles me.
Yeah.
And in particular, something like this, where it's set in a fantastical world.
Specifically set in a different time frame and mainly yeah. a different place, right?
Yeah.
To the Harry Potter films, which are mm-hmm. meant to be, what, like northern Scotland?
Yeah, which you kind of yeah. forgive. You're like, all right, maybe the majority of a school population in Scotland at this time would have been mostly white. Like, but then also, who gives a shit? Like, couldn't you just sort of, like...
Yeah, and when everyone was cast as well, that was like how long were they recording those films for? Like 15 years mm-hmm. or something? And like, people were not thinking about diversity the way they are now in 2000 yeah. or in 1999. And you've committed to those yeah. people. Whereas as soon as you have the opportunity in the way that Fantastic Beasts now mm-hmm. has to like cast better.
Mm-hmm. Which is why Star Wars is such a great example. Because there's yeah. literally jokes about... There's one black guy in the galaxy and like two women.
Yeah, yeah.
And now they've really gone to pains to make a difference yeah. there. And I appreciate
it makes
that.
The old ones more lovable as well, because you're like, okay, well, at least the team behind this, now that we see with the newer ones, yes. are like, oh, you know, you're trying.
They're trying to rectify what yeah, they did.
Like,
yeah,
like that's a nice thing. And I think as well with bad casting for these new films, there'll be kids watching this who see Albus Dumbledore on screen now and they like him less. Than they did in all the other ones mm-hmm. when it's like Michael Gambon, right? And it's just, he's just wonderful and yeah. great. And I just, yeah.
That's I mean, Jude Law is incredible.
Yeah.
As him, he gives a stellar performance. Like, I really, this is a weird thing to say, but like, I felt the spirit of Dumbledore in him. Like, there was a real essence he was capturing. And often you see people play a character's younger self or older self, and it can either be like, either they're not like them at all, or it's a caricature. Like, mm. I've been told in Han Solo, it feels like him doing an impression of Han Solo, of Harrison Ford. No. I haven't seen. But yeah, but with Jude Law, it felt really like it was him, and it was his character who he'd, you know, worked on, but there was something of Dumbledore in there, and there was a twinkle that just kind of reminded me of him, and I was like, mate, you have nailed that. I was so... happy for that, which is why I'm so annoyed that that's not what the story was about, because
yeah.
like, why it wasn't about Dumbledore is beyond me. And again, I'm repeating myself because we had this conversation the other day, but there were interesting threads that like shouldn't have been threads. They should have been the main story. There's Dumbledore can't fight Grindelwald because he loves him. It's a potentially gay relationship and it's forbidden at the time, and there's something very interesting like politically about that. There's something very human about that, like forbidden love and all that. That's lovely. And then there's like this love story that they push on you between Leta and Newt.
Mm.
But he's not interested in her in the present day at all. He's chasing this other woman. But throughout the film, we keep being given flashbacks and exposition that make you want Newt and Leta to be together, but you shouldn't want them because they're not. But that again was this forbidden love thing. It was like two outcasts in school. Neither of them really had friends. Like, and she believes herself to be a monster, and he has a penchant for monsters, and it, literally the line is said towards the end of the film where she acknowledges yes. that, but it's so throwaway.
It sounds weirdly Futurama.
Yeah.
That's weird. Yeah. You explained it to me. I'm like, yeah. What is this film?
It's mental. But like, that's all stuff that doesn't get explored. It's mentioned, but it doesn't get explored at all, and it's like, you could have followed any one of those stories from the beginning and just told us that, and instead you tried to tell us 50 different broken stories about random new cast members you've created but not really spent enough time developing. And
yeah
it's unfortunate. Sorry, I've gone back into complaining about it, Bill.
But it's such a shame when it's JK Rowling who's written it, and yet she managed to write 7 good, well-told story books.
She wrote books.
Yeah.
She never wrote the screenplays.
Yeah.
And now she is writing the screenplays.
Why?
It's not to say that people can't write, but I mean, I'm a scriptwriter and I'm now writing a book, and I say that now and people are like, well, it's probably shit. I don't know. I have to wait until both are approved to be good to say this. But I think it's they're just very, very different things. And when I'm writing a script, I'm in such a different headspace to when I'm writing prose, or even when I'm writing spoken word or poetry or whatever. Like, they're just different formats. And I don't know if it's because she isn't as good at this format, or because it's being translated wrong to the screen, or because the studio had too much involvement. I have zero idea, but it feels to me like a bad screenplay.
Yeah.
It feels like a writer who is used to being able to tell you everything that's happening in a character's head. And particularly like within a book, you'll have that thing where you get towards the end of the book and you'll just flash back on something.
Yeah.
And so you have a whole chapter of something that's happened in the past or whatever, an aside or exposition. And that often works in a book. Like within
that
the dark...
is how she writes. That is how J.K. Rowling wrote.
Okay. So see, I didn't Potter. Read them,
yeah,
but
she was
like with the Dark Tower series, the third book, Wizards in Glass, is all flashback. So you meet a character, you go on a journey for two books with him, and then suddenly you're in his past and you spend an entire book in his past. Wow. And then you come back in the fourth, and it's beautifully done. That's harder to do in a film. It just doesn't translate, and it feels like she's trying to wedge that format into a film and also relying on us just knowing what a character is thinking, and we don't because we're not being shown. So I think that's probably where it's falling down if I had to guess, but I really don't want to insult JK either because like, fucking hell. I mean, she's one of the most prolific writers
of her
time.
She's also been given the biggest screenplay probably of a newbie ever.
like I wouldn't profess to be able to do that. Yeah, I write screenplays, but they're small. They're people in rooms. Like, and I think that's what this could have been. I think that's the issue, is like, it suddenly is a big, silly CGI blockbuster, and it suffers from big, silly CGI blockbuster syndrome in the way that a lot of the DC movies do, where it's like, just focus on the human story and then we'll give a shit about the big Bernie Dragon Balls. Yeah. But I don't care about the big Bernie Dragon Balls because I don't care about these characters. Which is a shame because she has made us care about characters before.
Yeah, there's so much to unpack with that in particular. But I think we should draw this to a close.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think we're at like, what's our time like? Yes, we should. We've been talking for half an hour.
We didn't even get into all the stuff you wanted to get into.
But I think we've explored a lot, and I think as well, like, there's so much potential to talk more about it and to have more thoughts on it. And there's lots to talk about women in film. And you never know, maybe we'll do a part two sometime about something completely different.
I would love to. I'm always happy to talk about it. I mean, clearly.
I love a good part two. I'm like, always ready
all
for
about
them now.
It. All yeah. of- Did you hear the Chris McQuarrie Empire podcast? He came in to do one podcast with the Empire team, and I think they ended up doing three, and they were all like between 1 and 3 hours. It was all about Mission Impossible. It was just like... completely dissecting
that.
His own films, and they're stunning. I was like writing down quotes from them and everything. They're great.
I just love a good podcast.
Yeah. I love when you get to the end, you're like, there's more we could say. Yeah. Great, we'll just do another one.
But right now we are being shortened.
I have to go do a pub quiz.
Yes, and I have to go and I'm going to create a round table.
Are you?
Yeah.
With whom?
Social circle.
Great.
I know.
Lovely.
But that'll be fine. Okay. But I must go now. So thank you so much, Hazel. Where can we find you on the internet? Where do you prefer to be followed?
Ooh, I love being followed anywhere, really. Just around, about the place. My YouTube is youtube.com/Hazel. That ranges from all my vlogs and stuff to the script.
I love
script
that you have /Hazel.
Because I used to work at YouTube and I got it for myself.
But that is not possible anymore. I know some people
you can't
have like
/Tom.
We can't do that anymore.
Can't do it anymore. So that's YouTube, and I'm the Hazel Hayes on Instagram and Twitter. You'll find I'm more opinionated on one than the other. I'll let you figure that out for yourself.
I still follow her on both. So.
Thank you. But you're one of very few.
Anyway, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this chat as much as I enjoyed having it. Hazel is hilarious. She is so funny and so witty and so dry in her humor. I love it. Let us know what you thought about Fantastic Beasts and whether you're going to go find your way to a cinema. Hey, on Twitter and Instagram. Use the hashtag TheSundaySocial on Twitter. And on Instagram, you can go to find us at TheSundaySocialPodcast. That was a really hard mouthful. I don't quite know why. I'm really looking forward to next week on the podcast when we have a very special guest. I'm really hoping it doesn't fall through. Fingers crossed. So until then, I will speak to you next week.
Oh, and if you could leave a review on your favorite podcasting app, that would be incredible. I personally use Apple Podcasts, but I know some people use Overcast, some people use Spotify. Leaving a review would help us greatly. So thank you so much if you get around to it. And I think this is the point where I will say bye. So bye-bye. I hope you have a wonderful week and enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.